Hello and welcome aboard this podcast of RTÉ Radio 1's maritime programme Seascapes, which is presented and produced by Marcus Connaughton. You can email the programme seascapes@rte.ie. Hello and welcome aboard this week's edition of your maritime programme Seascapes. We'll be asking you about the origins of the website www.lugnad.ie, and we'll have copies of Edward Burke's book Bound for Australia in our Seascapes competition. Nominations for Event of the Year on the Yachts and Yachting magazine website include the IFDS Disabled Sailing World Championships held this summer in Kinsale, and we'll be giving you details of the link so you can vote. A listener has some thoughts on the naming convention for naval vessels. We'll be revisiting the recent Maritime Heritage Gathering at the National Maritime Museum of Ireland and hearing from historian and maritime researcher David Snook. We talk to Seamus Bovaird from the Inishowen Maritime Museum in Donegal. First this week on Seascapes, to our inland waterways, and to Colin Becker of the Inland Waterways Association of Ireland, whom we met in Dunleary.
Apart from anything else, the weather was absolutely incredible and we saw quite a lot of activity on the canals and on the rivers and so on. But I think this gathering is actually very useful, and it brought home to me that in the times of austerity we have a tendency to get quite depressed about the state of things. What actually came out to me out of this gathering was, in fact, how much is actually going on and how much stuff is there that we can build on. And I think that's really important to kind of remember. I would have said in the last particularly 18 months, I would have seen there were sort of growth in the number of people who would call the association interested in getting involved in boating. You're not seeing people buying the €500,000 gin palaces anymore, but there's people out there who scraped a few bob together or found it under a mattress and they said, I've bought a small boat, I want to get involved. And I think that's fantastically encouraging, because to me that's what the Inland Waterways is about. It's about bringing people onto the water in a relatively safe way and a benign way, but also quite a cheap way. And I think that's very encouraging to see. For me, the Lough Derg rally in that incredibly hot week in July has to be the... Has to be a significant one, simply because of the temperatures. When you see 33 or 34 degrees on Lough Derg, you kind of tend to remember that. There's things going on around the management of the canals that we need to keep an eye on. But I think we're all looking forward to seeing the new chief executive in Waterways Ireland making her mark on things. And I think we're looking forward to maybe a new era, which is not to criticise the people that were there before, but just to say, new person, new opportunity. This is good, you know.
We stay with Maritime Heritage and hear next from the Northwest and from Seamus Bovaird of the Inishowen Maritime Museum, from which we broadcast on Seascapes some years ago.
When you come from somewhere like Inishowen, which is peripheral, and then you get an opportunity to talk to someone who's equally peripheral in Cork or Galway, you see a lot of the common problems and in a lot of cases common solutions. So the last few days has been very good for that. It has also focused the attention of a lot of people on the fragmentation and the need for networking. Digital imagery, all that is the way to go. We do feel that some organisations can react quicker than others, and I hope that more work will come out of this. This year we had an increased footfall on last year, and I must say how much of it was driven by the City of Culture going on in Derry and the Clipper race from the previous year and Clipper coming back again next year. There seems to be more of a maritime buzz. There's also some work going on along the border areas and the peace and reconciliation about revisiting the First World War, and we would get quite a few people just calling in asking for advice on how they can find out information about people who were lost in the First World War or who went to sea in the First World War. That seems to be an emerging trend, and it's something that we're going to have to work on. Greencastle was not unique, but in the run-up to the First World War, being a fishing village, we had a lot of people in the Royal Naval Reserve, and they were called up. They then were, some of them went to sea. There wasn't enough ships to take all the reservists, so they created the Royal Naval Division, which turned them into soldiers. And we had Greencastle men dispatched within about 2 weeks over to what was then the siege of Antwerp. And from a small town land, you had people who ended up escaping entirely, getting back to the UK, some going across the border into neutral Holland and being interned, some captured by the Germans and becoming prisoners of war. So you had three actual outcomes for people from that one village. Yesterday, for instance, we spoke to Ian Lawler, doing a bit of diving up our way, and he produced a photograph of the Vicknor, HMS Vicknor. There was three Greencastle fishermen lost in her, and we couldn't find a photograph. We have photographs of some of the men that were lost, but coming down here, meet Ian by accident, and the subject comes up, and there's another piece of the picture.
And also you've managed to, because sometimes whilst we're, as you said, it's fragmented, you've also established great links with New Brunswick, haven't you?
Yeah, we can't claim the credit for that. That was goes back a long time, and it would be an Inishowen Development Partnership would have been the drivers there. And all they did was rediscover links. Like, for instance, Newfoundland, I think 40% of the new face can trace them back to Waterford. Not Dublin, not Cork, just purely Waterford. New Brunswick, something like 38% of the population there can trace themselves back to Ulster. Not purely a northwest exodus. You know, when somebody got out there, they sent for the family, that sort of thing. And we've had visitors come back and forth from New Brunswick. They've been here this year again. They're working in Derry with McGee. Dennis Noel's now retired. He was a state archivist over there and was a very good friend of ours, our friend too, as he still is. When the UK decided to do away with all their merchant seamen's records, they kept every year ending in five as for themselves as examples. They didn't know what to do with all the others, and I think they were going to dump them. But a university in New Brunswick has taken charge of them. So if you want to research ancestors in the British Merchant Navy, be the Irish, English, Scottish, you have to go to New Brunswick. A lot of our stuff has local links, so if you pick one thing, you're going to upset somebody else. From a 3D digital thing, we do have the propeller of HMS Wasp, which sunk on its way from Sligo to Mavill, going to pick up bailiffs to go out to Enstrahull Island to collect the rent that hadn't been paid. But she was a sailing ship with an engine, not the other way about. And the actual propeller itself has got an engineering perspective, not attached to the actual fact that they were going to take a cargo of bailiffs out to Enstrahull, but the actual propeller itself has an engineering perspective. Well, I'm keen on, I do a bit of sailing myself, so I'm keen on the model sailing boats that we have, which were scale models. Now, we have been told that the only rule was that they could only be built out of staves of a herring barrel. So that limited the length. And up to that, then you could work, build the boat and put your own piece of design in, and then you had to sail it so it would sail through gates, so you had to be able to control it, you could ballast it, give it a list, and we have several of those. Brian McDonald gave us one that came straight out of his grandfather's roof space, so it was as it was rigged in the 1950s. Brian's also putting a mast in one of the others, because I made a mast for it then tried to rig it and it didn't work, so we discovered it was 6 inches out, so Brian's remedying that. And I find those of interest because we're still sailing.
Now, next year, as you say, the Clipper race is coming back to Derry, which is terrific. The one difficulty, I suppose, last year was that the Volvo Ocean race was in Galway, so they clashed in terms of events. But there will be a huge interest, and the Derry boat is doing well in the race so far.
Yes, when it's doing well, we refer to the fact there's a Donegal skipper. When it falls back a bit, it becomes a Derry boat.
Seamus Bovaird of the Inishowen Maritime Museum, located in the former Coast Guard station in Greencastle. You can log on to www.inishowenmaritime.com for further details. Speaking of Donegal, next Friday sees the launch of a book celebrating the maritime paintings of Kenneth King. The author is Marianne O'Kane Bole, and the book is titled Kenneth King, Life and Work, and published by Bad Toy Publications. King began his career when he was commissioned into the Royal Navy as a chaplain and served in the Arctic, Atlantic, Mediterranean and Far Eastern waters. He began painting in 1976 and continues to paint from his studio in Glencolumbkill. He comes from a family of artists, including his father, Richard Joseph King, the renowned Irish stained glass artist. The book features over 100 illustrations, predominantly in full colour. It's the largest study to date on an Irish marine artist and documents Kenneth King's formative beginnings, his time at sea, and his significant artistic contribution in recording Ireland's maritime history and heritage. Kenneth King, Life and Work, is being launched on Friday evening next in Derrybank. Only a few weeks after the Operation Commander of the EU Naval Force, Rear Admiral Bob Tarrant, issued another warning about the ongoing piracy threat, there have been two more piracy-related incidents off the Somali coast this week. The first happened on Tuesday when the EU Naval Force German frigate, FGS Niedersachsen, prevented 10 suspect pirates from getting far out to sea. The second incident happened on Wednesday at sea, 460 miles southeast of Mogadishu, when a merchant ship had to repel an attack from 5 armed suspect pirates. Have you seen the much talked about Captain Phillips, starring Tom Hanks as yet? One man who has was a recent guest here on Seascapes. He was kidnapped by Somali pirates, and he is Fred Parle, living in Sligo, who's writing his memoirs about that time. The IFDS Disabled Sailing World Championships, which took place in Kinsale at the splendidly refurbished Kinsale Yacht Club this summer, is nominated as Event of the Year on the Yachts and Yachting magazine website. You can access the link and vote by navigating to www.yachtsandyachting.co.uk/awards2014. Do show your support. Next here on Seascapes to historian and maritime researcher David Snook, who spoke to Seascapes at the recent maritime gathering.
Well, really I've gone for the photographs because these are based on identity cards, and the great thing about them from 1918 are they've got a photograph of the seaman because it's part of the identity cards. Just why did they do them? It was at a time when Britain thought she might lose the First War. Running out of men, the Germans had attacked on the Western Front April 1918, so they decided to extend conscription and check on merchant seamen. Merchant seamen were exempt from conscription. So what they suspected was that people were registering as merchant seamen but not going to sea. So this was the government's way of checking on them, and they did a large number of cards. It ran until 1921. Altogether, there are 300,000 cards in Southampton. They've got the archive. And myself and my family, six of us, spent about 1,000 hours in Southampton going through all the 300,000 records, extracting and transcribing the Irish ones, and put them onto a database searchable database and then put it online. I didn't put it online. I got somebody from Wales who was good at that sort of thing to do it. But his name was Callahan. So he was originally from Ireland. He was the best thing to do was go on the site. If you Google Irish Mariners, you'll find the site. That's the best way. And from there, go from there, really. And if you're anywhere in the 32 counties, especially if you're in a maritime area, then look it up. If you have a problem or you've got more information, tell me. Last night Minister Deanahan, who's from Lixnor. Did I say that right? He's from Lixnor. So as a preparation, I looked up men who were from Lixnor, and I found three from his area. And I looked again for, is there any mention of the same surnames now? And there are. I think it was two Weirs and a Keane. And those founders are still in Lixnor now. 300 men as well in County Kerry. Any county in Ireland's got big numbers, especially if you're on the East Coast. The East Coast is where the numbers are.
Irish Ferries is to increase its capacity and frequency on the Dublin to Holyhead route through the introduction of a third ship next month. At present, the ferry company operates 8 sailings per day on the key Irish Sea route using its flagship Ulysses and the high-speed craft Jonathan Swift. Irish Ferries has chartered the Epsilon to supplement its existing Ireland to Britain service. The ship, built in 2011, will provide 2 additional departures per day in each direction, which will result in an increase in the company's schedule to a maximum of 12 sailings between Dublin and Holyhead each day. The latest edition of the RNLI's Lifeboat magazine features on its front cover the rescue of the sail training vessel, the Astrid. Inside its pages, you can read more about how a major tragedy was averted. Stunning photos by Mike McSweeney of Provision at the scene of the call-out. The autumn issue of Lifeboat also features the forthcoming book and exhibition by photographer Nigel Millard. The Fisherman's Apprentice by Monty Halls and the Lifeboat Service in Ireland, Station by Station by Nicholas Leach, are reviewed, plus details of the Shipfinder app to discover what vessels are around our coastlines, both here and in Britain. Now to that website that Joe Ryan mentioned last week, and to our competition. At the recent Heritage Gathering, we met up with Edward Burke, author of Bound for Australia, copies of which we have in our Seascapes competition.
The purpose of the website is to provide a vehicle for articles of approaching academic quality on Irish maritime affairs. Now, in Ireland, we're never going to have something of the calibre, status and quality of, say, the Mariner's Mirror, which is the organ of the Nautical Research Society. But Lugnad is an attempt to provide a platform for people that are publishing work of merit about Irish maritime history or maritime affairs. There are news pages, there are short item pages, there are even possibility of queries. It's not a blog site, so it's not open to every howie yet just to put up an article. We're not, though, going to have peer-reviewed articles in the terms of a learned journal.
So, how come the name Lugnad?
We're not going to tell you that, because there's going to be a competition which Marcus is going to organise, which will lead you to look at Lugnad and find out who Lugnad actually was. We've managed to organise a couple of copies of the book about the Taylor called Bound for Australia, so it's of maritime interest. Well, I'm always working on a few books on shipwrecks, and something more popular might emerge at some stage, and there are only 22,000 wrecks catalogued on the Irish coast to date, and I've a volume 4 coming sometime that will catalogue another 1,000. There's no doubt that there's an eclectic band here, but what I'm aware of is that so many of them are doing original research, which is appropriate to the website. There's so much knowledge out there, but it's disparate, it's not concentrated in any way. And that's the pity, that there's no umbrella research and information group. The web is the answer. There's no doubt about that. Because publication is out of date. Learned talks at institutes are out of date, and the web is the way forward. Programs such as yours are also the way forward, because that broadcasts to a wider audience and stimulates interest.
You can send your answers on a postcard to Seascapes, RT Radio 1, Father Matthew Street, Cork, or by email to seascapes@rte.ie. And all those web addresses will be up on our website. Congratulations to Commodore Mark Millett, Flag Officer Commanding Naval Service, and his appointment as Deputy Chief of Staff of the Defence Forces. A fortnight ago saw the sale of the Eleemer to a Nigerian buyer, and we had this note from a Seascapes listener about the naming conventions surrounding the newly commissioned vessels that are being built. Good evening, Marcus. I was surprised when I heard on the news that the Eleemer was sold for $300,000 after serving her country well since 1978. Surely she could have been put to better use by the state in her retirement, perhaps as a museum of the armed forces, or as a training vessel, or as a relic of the now-dead Irish shipbuilding industry, rather than fetching merely the price of a semi-detached house. I was even more surprised when I heard that her successor was to be named Ellie Samuel Beckett. So much for the long tradition of naming seagoing ships with feminine names, and the now well-established tradition of naming Irish naval vessels after female characters in Irish mythology. Do we know if Beckett had any connection to the naval service or the sea beyond taking the ferry to France? I can understand a commercial company closely tied to the tourist industry, such as Irish Ferries, naming its vessels after literary figures. But surely our naval service, without commercial pressures, could take a more traditional approach. Do you or any other Seascapes listener know who decided on the name of the new vessel? Maybe it was decided by a member of Cabinet from a landlocked Midlands county. Best regards, Martin O'Thresig. You can respond with your thoughts on naming vessels by writing to Seascapes, RT Radio 1, Father Matthew Street in Cork, or by email to seascapes@rte.ie. Now for some music from Planxty and the Good Ship Kangaroo, taken from their album After the Break, from a compilation on Tara Records, Masters of Their Craft.
I was a waiting man that lived at home at ease. Now I am a mariner that plows the angry seas. Oh, I always loved seafaring life, I bid me love adieu. I shipped a steward and cooked me boys and bore the kangaroo. Oh, I never thought she would prove false or either proven true, as we sailed away through Milford Bay and bore the kangaroo. Think of me, oh think of me, she mournfully did say, when you were in a foreign land and I am far away. And take this lucky threepenny bit, it'll make you bear in mind that loving, trust and faithful heart you left in tears behind. Cheer up, me, oh true love, don't weep so bitterly. She sobbed, she sighed, she choked, she cried and could not say goodbye. I won't be gone for very long, 'tis but a month or two. When I will return again, of course I'll visit you. Oh, I never thought she would prove false or either proven true, as we sailed away through Milford Bay on board the Kangaroo. Our ship was homeward bound from many's the foreign shore, and many is the foreign present unto me lovely bore. I brought tortoises from Tenerife and ties from Timbuktu, a China rat and a Bengal cat and a Bombay cockatoo. Head off I sought her dwelling on the streets above the town, where an ancient dame upon the line was hanging out her gown. Where is me love? She's vanished, sir, about 6 months ago. With the smart young man that drives the van for Chapel and Son and Co. Oh, I never thought she would prove false or either prove untrue as we sailed away through Milford Bay on board the Kangaroo.
The good ship Kangaroo there in Planxty. The World Ocean Council and the Nautical Institute have jointly produced a guide to assist maritime professionals to better understand and engage in marine spatial planning. The guidance will also help MSP proponents understand shipping industry requirements in relation to management of ocean areas. The Shipping Industry and Marine Spatial Planning, a Professional Approach, issued by the World Ocean Council and the Nautical Institute, who are working to ensure that maritime professionals can readily become more informed and involved in MSP, particularly at a local level. The guide provides an introduction to MSP and an overview of key shipping-related issues which need to be considered as MSP moves forward in various parts of the world. You can read more on the Seascapes webpage. Next week here on Seascapes, we'll be hearing about the Dublin Dock Workers Preservation Society from Alan Martin and Jimmy McCarthy. We hear about a new charity supporting families of those lost at sea. We follow the progress of Damien Foxall in the Transat Jacques Vabre. We'll also have news from the Clipper Ventures yacht race as they sail from South Africa bound for Australia. All that and much more. Until next Friday night, tight lines and fair sailing. Thank you.